And we are live. Gamers, Decentral Gamers, welcome to the show, the official Decentral Gamer podcast. And today we have quite a fun episode for you lined up. As the guest, Jay from Bitcoin Daily, a total badass within the DG ecosystem, the crypto ecosystem. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's kick it off, right? I would love to really hear about your story as it relates to getting into crypto. And then, would love to hop into how you really got into the DG ecosystem after that.
Yeah, for sure. So, I basically got into crypto by luck, really, back in 2016. I got in prior to the 2017, huge rally where everything went crazy. I got in like under $1,000, and the way that I actually got in was because I was trying to do some sports betting, and since I wasn't allowed to sports bet because of my location, the only way that I was able to deposit money was through Bitcoin. So that's literally how I got into Bitcoin. I was doing sports betting, and the only way to do it at that time was through Bitcoin. So that's how I got in. And then from there, once I saw like the prices going crazy, I was already investing in the stock market, but I wasn't too much into Bitcoin because I didn't understand it yet. And it was kind of complicated. I remember back in like even earlier before that, like 2013 or so, I tried to buy Bitcoin, but it was so complicated that I was like, I stopped trying to figure it out. So in 2017, when everything went crazy, it really piqued my interest. And that's when I just went full send, into crypto, into investing, into education. And I created a brand around education for Bitcoin, because when I was learning, there's such a void in the space on learning and it being simple. You know what I mean?
Totally. There's so much noise out there. It's hard to really know like what's real and what's not.
Exactly. And back then it was like, everything was like, the people that were explaining it were the people that were like, really part of the whole tech part of it. So the way that they were explaining it was usually overly complicated and not simplified enough for the average person to understand. So I started Bitcoin Daily back in 2016, 2017. And just started creating educational content ever since then.
So you got into crypto pretty early on. It's been, seems like, mm-hmm. about half a decade now. Yeah. And when did you really come across the DG ecosystem, and how did that whole thing unfold?
Yeah, so for DG, I came across DG probably back in November of last year. I was looking into... I'm always looking for new projects, especially things that are different. Back then, the whole thing with the metaverse was really starting to take off, and I was really looking into it. I knew it was like the next thing. So I started looking into like Decentraland, into Sandbox, and I came across Ice Poker, I think, in a video. It was the first time, I think, on YouTube. I might have seen something about it. So then I started doing more research on it, and I found a video by DeFi Donut, Chris Cray. And that's basically from there, I minted my first wearable back in November. I think I minted my first two wearables in November, actually. And it's just, again, I loved it. I've always been a huge fan of poker. I've played a lot of poker in my life, in live casinos or online. And it was just such an easy decision. And when I saw how it works and how easy it was for anyone to enter into the space without even needing to put their own hard-earned money in, it was just, game changer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to give a shout out to some of the folks live here. Shout out to you, Drew. So you came across it in November and you minted your first wearable. What really captured your attention, though? Like, when you first started to learn about it, what stood out to you about DG, about ice poker, as opposed to everything else that you've seen over the past half a decade?
Yeah, so the whole play to earn model, I had heard of it, you know, nonstop. But it never really made too much sense, and didn't feel like you were making enough money. Like, I think there was like Axie Infinity that was like play to earn, but you had to put like a bunch of time in it, and I don't think the return was really worth my time. So, you know, I didn't like that model, so I didn't get into that. When I came across Decentral Games, this play to earn model made so much more sense, especially with the delegation model, which was something that really piqued my interest, because who doesn't love passive income? So once I saw that I was able to, you know, to buy this and then use it to make passive income, I could delegate it to someone else so that, you know, who maybe didn't have the upfront money and I can make passive income. Like, that was such an easy choice. And that really opened up my mind to the possibilities of the whole play to earn model.
I love that. I love that. And so you minted, and it seems like you started playing first. What were your experiences when you first started playing?
Yeah. So when I first started playing, I think I started on my laptop, and my laptop just could not run Decentraland. Like, it was just so buggy. It would be really slow and stuff like that. So then I used it on, I started playing on my desktop, and on my desktop runs it a lot smoother. And you know, it was amazing the way that the gameplay was set up. Like, you know, you go in there and it's literally like a metaverse, you know, and then you just go to the poker lounge, and I started playing, and I saw how easy it was to, you know, just complete challenges every 24 hours, make some money. You know, you can make anywhere between $30 to $75, depending how you performed, every 24 hours. And that was crazy to me, you know, like, how I was just like, how is this possible? Like, is this real? You know, so it really just opened my mind to that whole experience.
That's amazing. So you start earning, you get introduced to this play to earn model. It's a total game changer.
Yeah.
At what point are you like, oh my God, I'm starting to really see like the potential of this? Like,
yeah. So I think instantly, as soon as I, you know, started playing, it was just instant. I was like, wow, like, why hasn't anyone thought about this before? Like, why, you know what I mean? Like, whenever you come across something that's amazing, you're like, wow, why didn't I think about this? You know, like, right. It seems so obvious after the fact, you know, like when you think back to, Airbnb, like, wow, it's so obvious. Like, when you think of Uber, like, wow, it's so obvious. Like, why didn't I think about this? So this was kind of the same thing that just kind of clicked in my head. It was like, wow, it's so obvious. Like, why didn't somebody think about this before? And like I said, man, this is game changer. I think this is not only the top play to earn game and model out there right now, but it's probably also the most lucrative, and I think it's what's going to set the bar for every other project that's going to come afterwards.
Absolutely. I totally agree. So let's talk about how you scaled up your activity with NDG. We were talking a little bit earlier, and you kind of told me where you were, but maybe take us through that chronology of like, okay, you realized you're playing, you're earning, and then what do you do from there? How do you scale that up to maximize your earnings?
Yeah. So, you know, I got my first wearable. I started playing after the first day. I was just like, this is genius. You know? So I was like, I need to get more. Like, how can I get more wearables? So at the time, I think they were selling on the secondary market for 0.75 or even less, maybe. Thinking back to that now, I'm like, why didn't I just, you know, completely sweep the floor on all of those at that time? but yeah, I was just waiting for the new drops. I think back in November, there's only like a few thousand, maybe like 1 to 2, maybe 3,000 people in the Discord at that time. So really wasn't that many people. So the drops were pretty easy to get. Unlike now, now it's a lot more difficult. Everybody's trying to get a drop. I was whitelisted yesterday and I still couldn't get a drop. So I'm very frustrated about that. but it shows that it's growing. You know, the whole thing is growing. It's moving forward. People are starting to notice, and eventually it's only a matter of time before this thing is like, you know, next level, next world. It's worth that everybody's talking about.
Absolutely. So, okay. So you started just trying to get as many wearables as possible.
Right.
And at what point did you start to make the decision of like, okay, I can only play a certain amount of time
right.
every day. Just, you know, we only have a certain number of hours in a day. So you had to start moving to the delegation model,
right.
Which is also a beautiful model because it's more passive. So you can kind of leverage the time of other people and give them an opportunity, so on and so forth. So how did you move from you playing to then delegating and running your own guild through the delegation model? How did that whole thing happen?
Yeah, so once I got my second wearable, I think it was towards the end of November. I think final week of November, there was a drop. I got my second wearable. And at that point, I wasn't going to play with two wearables. So I was like, let me try out the whole delegation system that I had heard about, I had read about. So I started trying that out. I delegated my first wearable out, and it started making me, you know, money every single day without me having to do anything. Then in December, I got my third wearable and had both of them delegated out. And I actually, because of the holidays, I delegated the one that I was playing with out as well. So I had all three delegated out, and I still, I think, made probably like $1,000 or so in December with me barely playing. Like, I played a little bit, but then I delegated them all out probably like a week or two into December, and I still made $1,000 overall in December with me not putting much time in. So, you know, I've seen people on Twitter, I think, that have like, you know, 18, 20, 30 wearables that are making insane amount of money every single day passively, because obviously they're not playing with all those wearables. So it's just it's a crazy opportunity, you know, to be able to make this much money. Usually for a return like this in real life, like, for example, in real estate, you got to put up so much more money up front to get a comparable return to what you're seeing right now in with this. Like, I'm putting here, you're putting in what, like $1,000, $2,000 if you mint it, and then you're making back anywhere between $1,000 to $2,000 a month. It's crazy. And like the potential for this is just insane to me.
It's pretty bonkers. So at this point, what's your strat? Like, are you just trying to acquire as many wearables as humanly possible and just delegate out? Like, what's your long-term optimization strat?
Yeah. So, I'm definitely trying to acquire as many wearables as possible. I am not selling. I think that the price on these wearables is eventually going to skyrocket. I think the floor today is at 2 Ethereum, which is insane. Basically, what I'm trying to do is, so I'm actually in a like with a group of people, and what we're doing is we're building our mini guilds, right? And then we have different players come in, and we give them like basically a 2 to 3 week trial period for them to perform. We give them kind of advice as far as like strategy, which is poker strategy, really. You get the same poker strategy you use anywhere else. It really applies to this as well, so that they can perform as best as possible. So we try to get them to focus, like, you know, okay, first focus on getting the challenges done, then focus on maximizing your chips and your percentage, you know, your multiplier. So that's the next step, I think, to be able, you know, once you get enough delegates, to be able to guide them in the right direction, because if they make more money, then you're also going to make more money. It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I love that. So seems like kind of your playbook moving forward is keep getting more wearables, keep delegating as much as possible, and then focus on training your group and having them be the best players that they could possibly be.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so that kind of covers the, you know, how you got to this point and kind of what your macro strat is. But let's dive into the poker of it. Let's talk some poker too. So maybe you could give us just a little bit of background on like how you really got into the world of poker and kind of how you build your thesis when it comes to poker, when it comes to playing, and how to really make the maximum EV decisions over the long term.
Man, I got into poker so long ago. This probably goes back over 10 years since I got into poker. And I don't want to try to show my age too much here, but so I was playing poker a lot back when there was, I think it was called like the Black Thursday or Black Friday, something like that, when the US basically canceled out all poker sites that was around. So I think back then it was like Poker Stars, Full Tilt, you know. So, you know, this goes back, it's about 10 years back, and I was playing back then. And I was like super, super into it. And then after that, I kind of took a break for a few years. And it was just kind of something that I would play off and on, off and on. And actually last year, 2021, when things opened up again at the casinos, I started going to my local casino and playing live because I just enjoy playing. Like I love anything that has to do with strategy and really thinking and trying to outthink opponents, things like that. So, you know, because of that, because I've been playing for so long, I've read a lot of books. I've watched a lot of videos. I follow I don't know if you ever watch people on YouTube like Brad Owens, that they actually show themselves playing live at casinos. That's actually really, really cool because they show themselves playing live and they go through their thought process on why they're making certain decisions. And I think that's a great way to learn poker right now. There's a lot of people doing it. I think Brad Owens is like one of the biggest ones, which is why he was the first one that came to mind. But through all of that, I've learned a lot of things. And I learned a lot of the theory and the way to play different hands and stuff like that to maximize, you know, the EV and make the best possible EV decisions. So what I try to show people and kind of talk about is, you know, which is the most beginner thing is, you know, what starting hands do I play with? Because people just want to play all hands, you know, especially if they're like suited or anything, they think it looks pretty, even if it's a seven deuce suited, people are like, oh my God, but it's so beautiful. It's suited. and they'll just play it, you know, especially after a raise. One thing I've noticed so far, you know, in my experience playing in on ice poker is that a lot of this theory is not yet out there, you know, as in these games. So a lot of people are just playing really random stuff. Going all in, any ace, you know, if they have any ace, so just go all in with it. A lot of people with top cards, a lot of times like ace king, ace queens, things like that, like they're not even raising sometimes. So it's hard right now, the state of the game on ice poker, you have to play kind of pretty what's that word that I'm missing here? You have to play really tight. There you go. So you have to play tight and also tight aggressive. So tight aggressive is kind of what I've been doing. I play tight until I have cards that I like. Then I raise. And just with the raise alone, sometimes it takes a lot of people out the pot. And that's kind of the whole point of raising, because you want to get a feel for what your opponents might have. Now, again, because there's still not a lot of theory in ice poker as far as the players go. A lot of them are beginners. So you still, even with when you're doing stuff like that, you have to be aware that they might just be calling with anything, you know? So you don't want to be going all in on any hands unless you have the nuts, basically, is the way that I've been playing it. I've been, again, focusing on trying to get the challenges first. Then I focus on getting my chips up is usually the way that I've been approaching it.
That's smart. So let's just kind of step back a little bit, because I want to make sure even those who don't know any poker terminology can really get a lot of value from this. So when you're talking about playing tight, are you talking about like you're sitting there and you're playing cautiously and you're making sure I'm not going to go bet hard, or I'm really not going to play too much unless I have a really good hand that I think, okay, I could actually make something from this. Like maybe you could explain like what that means of actually playing tight.
Yeah. So basically when I say I'm playing tight, I'm looking for cards that will probably have an edge over my opponent's calling range. So if for example, and the main thing, the first thing that you should be thinking about is probably your position. I think this is something that you always need to be aware of, your position on the table, that probably not too many people are aware of when they're first starting out. So depending on my position is how tight or how loose I'm going to play. So if I'm playing tighter, that means that I'm playing a smaller range of the cards that I'm being dealt. If I'm playing looser, then I'm playing a wider range of the cards I'm being dealt. So if I'm in early position, meaning like under the gun or anything like that, and under the gun is a position right after the blinds. That means that you're the first to act before the flop, pre-flop, you're the first to act. Post-flop, you're third to act. You're after the blinds. So under the gun, since you're the first person coming into the pot, if you're just limping in, and when I say limp, that means just calling the minimum bet, which is 20. If you're just limping in, you can get raised by better hands usually. And if you're raising, you could get re-raised. So you have to, if you're going to raise, you have to have a stronger hand than if you're, for example, the last person to act, meaning late position. So on the button is basically the best position to have, because you get to react, you get the most information before you have to make a decision. So you can play a wider range of hands at that point. So that's what I mean when I say tighter versus looser.
So basically you need to take into account if you are forced to play earlier on than everybody else, you have to keep in mind that there are people behind you. And right. If you don't really have a strong hand and you're kind of limping in, like people are going to take notice if they're playing, you know, as they should. Right. And then they're going to try, you know, they're going to try to push you out because they have more information by the time it gets around for them to play. They just have more information than you, so they can make a more educated decision than you can. Exactly. just from the information standpoint.
Exactly. So you have to be a lot more careful when playing from early position, which is why you play tighter in a smaller group of hands, a smaller range of hands. You only want to play like premium hands, like, you know, pocket aces, all the way down. I'll open up pretty much any set. And then if I get re-raised really big, then, you know, the lower sets, I'll let them go. But I love set mining because that's like, you know, one of the ways that you can really get a lot of chips from people, if you hit your set, meaning that you hit a three of a kind. Once you're in late position, you could open up a wider range. You know, basically any suited ace at that point you can open up because you have so much more information. Now you have an idea of where your hand stands. So now you can represent all sorts of ranges at that point, and people don't really know what you're going to be holding. So I could open up and, you know, a 7-8, for example, I could open up 7-8 suited. And even if the flop comes, you know, with an ace or king on the board, I could represent those hands because I know what the person in front of me is doing. So if they limped in and then I raised them and they called, they probably don't have too good of a hand. So on a flop, if an ace or king or anything like that comes out, even if I don't have those, if they check to me, I could usually represent those hands because I raised pre-flop. So that's why raising is so important in poker, because you have the advantage of even if you miss a flop, you could still steal it by, you know, making a C bet, a continuation bet, and representing those ranges.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you're basically trying to use not just what you have, but also the information that you've gotten based on how other people are betting around the table. And you're just gathering information in order to then kind of play off of what you think is most likely it is that they have.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. So how much are you playing, like, I don't know if I want to use this term, but I think of it as like rational poker, right? Like, like given the same set of circumstances, you know, out of 10 rational high level players, most likely they're all going to take this course of action, right? Or, or a significant majority are going to take this action. We see noobs not doing that. They'll just kind of do whatever it is they feel like. So how often are you playing rationally and just trying to make EV plus decisions, assuming everybody else is also playing rationally, versus kind of trying to like understand who it is you're at the table with and trying to understand like, okay, do they know what they're doing, or can I just wait for them to mess up?
Yeah. So I think, when I first sit at any table, I always treat it the same. I always play very, very rational, and I expect everyone knows what they're doing. And I just kind of watch how everybody at the table is playing. I look for the people who are being overly aggressive or overly passively. And then I try to, you know, take in that information so that I know how to play against them anytime that we're in a pot together. A lot of times, for example, yesterday I was playing against somebody and they were overly aggressive. I said, okay, so he was just raising a lot of times. So if he's raising a lot, he's probably not raising good hands. So what I did, I just played a little bit tighter so that when he raised me, I would know I probably 75 to 80% chance of having a better hand than him. So finally it came across where I had a good hand. He raised me. And then at that point, when I'm playing against someone aggressive, now, regardless of what happens, I'm just going to play to their style, right? So since he's aggressive, I'm going to let him basically what you call let them hang themselves, right? So I'm just calling on the flop. I'm checking because I knew every time that it flopped, regardless of whatever the flop was, he was always c-betting.
They're coming out guns blazing.
Exactly. So he would raise to like, you know, 120. So, you know, most people are raising to like 60 or something. He was raising to 120 pre-flop every time. And then he would always see bet. So he was scaring a lot of people off pots. And I knew there's no way he had all these hands. So I just called. He re-raised me or whatever. And I, again, just called. On the flop, I checked. He continuation bet. I called. On the turn, I think he slowed down, or I think he bet again. Yeah, he bet again on the turn. Again, I check called, and then on the river, I checked. He bet again. I go over him all in. He called me, and it was an easy win. I didn't get to see what he had, but because he didn't show his cards, but a very easy win. So that's, you know, when I sit at the table, that's what I look for, so that I can basically build my plan when I'm in a pot against them. So if they're overly aggressive, again, I let them hang themselves. I let them do all the betting. I just sit back. I check call.
You play right into it.
Exactly. If I see that they're passive, then I'm going to be the aggressive one. And I'm going to, when they're limping in, I'm always going to raise them. If they raise, I see a lot of people like do min raises, which they raise to just 40. So if they raise a 40, I'm going to re-raise them. And then on the flop, if they check, I'm going to, you know, put pressure on them. And I'll sometimes put pressure on them for two streets at least, you know, before giving it up. So it just depends, you know, the type of player. I always sit at the table. I expect everyone knows what they're doing. I learn, you know, I watch and learn, and then I start, you know, adapting to the style of the table at that point.
I love that. Just want to give a quick shout out to Chris. He's playing ice poker and listening right on. That's what you should be doing. Always be playing, always be listening, be learning, getting better. Jay, this has been fascinating. So when you're when you're kind of feeling out the table, like how long does it take you to really identify what style these players are? Like how many hands do you give it? How many times do you need to see them take action before you're like, okay, I got you nailed?
Probably like, I would say 5 to 10 hands, really. You can usually tell how people are playing, you know, let's say 10 hands to be safe. I would say 15 to 20 minutes, I can usually tell, and less than that, how people are playing, what they're playing like, you know, what type of player they are, and if whether they know what they're doing or not. You know, just by the way that they bet, I could usually tell if they know what they're doing or not. And a lot of times I'll call people down to the river if the bets are small enough, just to see what they're betting with. I want to know what they're doing and why they're doing it with what type of hands. So if I'm seeing them, you know, raise with really bad hands, I see them going to the river with really bad hands, I take note of that, you know? And you can usually see that within the first 10 to 20 minutes that you're sitting at a table.
How often when you're playing, do you play and then you immediately turn to see and just like look at someone and just, you know, you're eye them down?
Yeah, I'm always looking at them, and especially the people that are flying. How do you fly? I don't understand how some people are flying. I guess I haven't been in Decentraland long enough to figure out how to fly, but I see people like not standing next to me, just floating next to me sometimes. So I'm just like looking at them like, why are they floating? Like, what is going on here? But yeah, it's so funny to do, you know, and just kind of look around and see, you know, how everybody, their avatars, like what they're wearing and stuff like that. Some people have like some crazy, crazy things on. And the chat's always going off too. So I like to watch the chat, and then I look for the people in the chat to see if they're on my table or not. Cause some people get really upset, and those are people I want to target.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If someone's getting mad, they're definitely not thinking rationally. Like they've probably entered mentally fight or flight. And so, you know, they're going to fight because they're at the table. And so, yeah, you can absolutely play on their emotions like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right on. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about when, because I kind of see like this idea of like understanding who's at the table, and like if they're passive, going at them, if they're aggressive, letting them come at you and then flipping it on them kind of at the 11th hour. I kind of see that as like a shark move. Like you're a freaking shark and you're out there and you're about to eat their lunch. When have you got sharked on? Like when, what have been some times where like somebody just like got you good and they kind of outplayed you, and like how did you learn from those instances?
I think, you know, that's definitely happened to me. A lot more times that I would say like playing live, and playing, you know, like stuff like that, because I think live, it's a whole different ball game. Especially when there's money, a lot more money involved, it's a whole different ball game, because you're able to scare people off by betting a certain amount of money. So you're able to put a lot more pressure on them. On DG, the multiplier definitely helps a ton, because without the multiplier, everybody would just be going all in. So I was so impressed by the multiplier when I saw that was put in, because that was my first thought when I heard about this poker. I thought, you know, like Zynga, you know, the free poker app or whatever. And I've played on that before, and you can't really play because everybody just goes all in all the time with nothing. So it's like, I was like, okay, so what are they doing? And then when I read up on it and I saw how the multiplier worked, I was like, okay, that's genius. You know, that's a great idea. But even then, there's still a lot of degens out there that are playing and they just play with anything a lot of the times. And what I've had to learn from is that it's harder to pressure people out of hands. So usually, like if I'm playing live poker, I could most of the time pressure somebody out of a, you know, having top pair. So if they just have that one top pair, an ace, for example, they hit an ace, but there's on the board, there's, you know, the possibility for a flush, possibility for straights. If I usually what I would do in live poker, if I missed something, you know, at the river, I will represent, and if I don't think that they have what I missed, I would represent that, you know, that I hit a straight regardless. And I could, if I bet big enough, I could usually get people off their one pair hands. So I would make money that way. I've noticed that on DG, it's a little bit harder to do. People will go to the end with their ace with a three, you know, offsuit. Even if I'm betting 1,000 chips at them, you know, they'll go all the way to the end with their one, with their ace pair, regardless of their kicker. So, that's something that I've run into in DG. So it's one of the reasons I'm saying that you have to play a little bit tighter in when playing in DG, and you don't want to be going, too big and trying to put too much pressure on people, especially if you miss. Because people are willing to go the distance, is from what I've noticed and from my experience with their one pairs, or sometimes just second pairs, or even a bottom pair, and catch your bluff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It also is, it's much less difficult in a game when, even though it is like it is real, it's still kind of harder for people, I think, to take risk mitigation thoughts and take them as seriously when you're playing a game that feels like a game, versus like in live poker where, you know, you may have to whip out a couple hundreds from your wallet to like keep playing. Like, it's just a very different mindset.
Oh, 100%. Because especially like the people that are being delegated, I mean, they do have something on the line because their delegation is at risk if they lose, right? If they perform bad. But, you know, I've gone through many delegators already, many people that I've delegated already because of bad performance. And, you know, you're still going to run into it where people, you know, since they haven't spent any money and they're not, you know, they're not physically losing money. The risk is just not associated to their decision-making. So they're just going to call you down with very, very light hands, which is good and bad. It's bad because you can't pressure them off of hands, but it's good because when you do have a good hand, you're going to take all their chips.
That's right. That's right. So I want to kind of move towards the close here and talk a little bit about how you've been managing your delegations. Like, how do you think about it? You know, are you operating? Yeah, you mentioned giving people a couple weeks to really show their results, but like, how are you thinking about that? How are you optimizing your delegations? And then which kind of your strat for like training people up and helping them become better players?
Yeah, for sure. So what, at first, what I was doing is just going to like the DG Discord and finding one of the many messages on the thing, because they just spam it with messages, all sorts of people, you know, swearing that they're going to get you 2x every single day. So at first I was doing that, and I kept running into like inconsistent people that weren't checking it every day. And I, back then I couldn't figure out who it was. So if I was delegating several people at the same time, I couldn't figure out who was the person, but I would know that certain people either weren't checking in or weren't completing all the challenges, because I would look at my previous day's experience points and I would match it to the next day's experience points. And I would just jot it all down on the chart. I was handwriting everything. Like, I was keeping it, you know, to try to track it. So the delegation system has been amazing, you know, for being able to see exactly who's checking in. You can see if they've checked in already. You can see, you know, how they've performed, where they've performed, how many chips they won. So that is game changing. So what I've actually done, though, in order to try to find better players, I actually joined another Discord from somebody that I found on Twitter, where what they were doing is they do monthly training periods, basically. And then the people that perform well, they put them on the list called vouch players list. And those are people that have gone through the training and have performed well. So they're considered a vouch player. So, I mean, it's a small Discord right now, maybe I think less than 100 people probably. But that's kind of what we've been doing. So when people are looking for delegation, we'll bring them into the Discord. We'll put them through the training and we'll let them, you know, we'll let them play for a little bit. And depending how they perform, they'll either become a vouch player or, you know, they won't. And that's how I've been finding people, though. So now I have three pretty consistent players that are making at least a minimum of 100 chips every single day for me, as just by me just delegating out, they're making me 100 chips every single day at minimum, you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So, I just want to kind of start wrapping up here. Maybe you could leave us with a couple of words of wisdom of just, you know, things you've learned being in crypto, being in the DG ecosystem, being a poker player, playing with your own wearables, delegating out. I mean, you have so much experience, so many perspectives. What are just some parting words of wisdom you can share with the DG community?
I mean, as far as crypto, remember, guys, don't put in money that you can't afford to lose. And it's something that I think you always have to remind people to do, because people take out, you know, loans against their house to refinance their house, get loans and put it all in. I've seen a lot of people, especially in like the rebasing space lately, that did that. And those things have like tanked as of late because the whole market overall has been tanking. So, I mean, I think the main thing is that the next thing is always do your own research, know what you're getting into, and have a reason for why you're doing it. And look for potential in projects. So for DG, I think the potential is immense. I think it's a no-brainer to get involved, especially in what we're still in the early stages. And you know, the way that they're setting everything up is just amazing. I'm super excited about this project. And then as far as poker, I would say for the people, either they're playing themselves or they're being delegated, make sure that you go out there and really learn before you try to earn. That's one of my sayings that I always tell people: learn before you earn. You really got to put in the work if you want to see results. So even if you're just playing poker, go out, go on YouTube and watch videos, like learn the theory behind it, learn why to do certain things, you know, have at least a basic range of hands that you're playing, and have a reason for it. Don't just go out there and just play random stuff for just because you feel like it or because you're suited. In the end, you know, it's going to give you the best results in the end and in the long run for you, your delegator, or for anyone that you're delegating out to. I think if everybody just kind of has that same focus, the whole community will just be able to perform a lot better and make a lot more money.
Love it. Well, thanks, Jay. I appreciate you, man. And remember, everybody, we're Decentral Gamers here. We do not go in on a 2-7 offsuit. That's not our style. But thanks again, Jay. Shout out to everybody in the comments here. Chris, Cameron, Drew, appreciate all of you, and we will see you on the next episode. Take care, everyone.